I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. A very happy Friday to everybody out there. Recording this on October 2nd. Kind of a quieter show today. Not as much news on the Jazz front over the last week. Remember, we did this a week ago, and they just hired Dell Demps. They just hired Keon Dooling. So those were pretty big-breaking Friday stories. Fun to be able to talk about those, but still plenty going on. I reviewed the draft breakdown tapes and some game tape of Yoeli Childs from BYU and Sam Merrill. I'm going to break that down for you. I'm going to talk a little bit about what types of players fit the Jazz draft reputation since Dennis Lindsay has moved in and become the general manager, and then, of course, the vice president of basketball operations, which is his current title, with the team. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of Adam Silver's comments that he made earlier this week as well. Plus, Rudy Gobert talked about China, which is big in the NBA. That has not been an issue that's been brought up since October, last October, that is. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Let's start, first of all, and of course, I'll get to your mailbag at the end. I always like to answer your questions when you send them in. First, let's talk a little bit big picture, where Adam Silver said they're hoping to start next season in NBA arenas. Again, he talked to Bob Costas and CNN last week. He did his pre-finals media availability, which he does every year before the Lakers and the Heat played in Game 1. No surprise to see the Lakers there get that victory, especially now that Miami's beat up. Looks like Bam Adebayo is going to miss Game 2, according to Woj. So Lakers in a good spot to take over that series pretty convincingly. This is what Adam Silver said. He said, "It's certainly our goal, referring to playing in arenas, but it's dependent on some additional advancements. Rapid testing may be the key here." He last week said they were hoping to start maybe in January. He thought that was the earliest. He still said there's an outside chance it could be Christmas. I think a lot of people are focusing on Martin Luther King Day, which is in mid-January, which has traditionally been kind of a big NBA day anyways. It's one of the few times throughout the season that the league will play midday games. So don't be at all surprised that the Jazz end up playing right around that date in mid-January. They usually want to have about 3 weeks or so for to open and get ready for the season. So maybe that could start on January 1st, and then you start, you know, either Martin Luther King Day or late January, and you have that opportunity to get this season back and running. And then you try and figure out, are you going to finish before the Olympics start, which are late July, early August? Are you just going to not pay attention to the Olympics and say, hey, if players want to go, that's their choice, and they have to work that out with their teams? Are you not going to let players go? I think that would be a very difficult proposition to make, especially to some of the international players or the younger players who've never had a chance to compete for a gold medal. So I think those are things that are all going to be important to keep an eye on here over the next couple of weeks, because really they're going to have to get this nailed down pretty quickly if they want to have that done. One of the other issues that's going to come out of this is the labor issues. They have to basically renegotiate an entirely new CBA. They've got to figure out how to kind of even out this money. So with all the money lost this season from not having fans in the stands and losing 10 games, basically for every team in the regular season, what that basketball-related income does to the salary cap And Silver said, I don't have expectations of labor issues. There's no doubt there are issues on the table that need to be negotiated. I think no doubt there will be issues and difficult negotiations ahead, but I think we'll work them out as we always have. And I think that's a good sign. The NBA right now that hasn't had extremely positive press. I think it's kind of become pretty split up in the country. A lot of people are a little bit anti-NBA. A lot of people are very pro-NBA right now. They don't want to have a lockout that kind of hurts the fans that they do have, or some of those fans that are, you know, kind of middling or in the middle that aren't really sure how they feel about the league. So I think the NBA is going to push really hard to make sure that they don't lose fans by having a lockout, and that's going to take the owners being a little bit flexible, and certainly the players are going to have to be a little flexible as well to figure out a way to make up some of this lost money and how to kind of space it out over the next few years. So that's kind of the big case, I think, going on with the NBA right now. I don't think anything else Adam Silver said was particularly important or that Jazz fans would have a huge interest in, but I think that's promising. I think if you could start the league in January, play another 5 months, potentially have you know, teams either stationed in one city and have that in, you know, 10 different cities across the country where three teams kind of play mini tournaments or however you want to do the regular season to minimize travel. If you can have rapid testing, it should be relatively safe. You ought to be able to give some guys the day off in between where they can see their families and kind of have a more regular human life. I think that's going to be beneficial. And you look, Major League Baseball seems to have figured it out. The NFL's figuring it out. I know they've had postponed games. The NBA next year is going to have postponed games if they're not playing in the bubble. But I think they recognize how big of an ask it is to tell players they have to leave their families for an extended period of time. I don't think you can do it again this quickly. I don't think you can do it for 6 months. I think you're going to have to find a way to get these teams back and playing in arenas. You can read this article at kslsports.com. I wrote it on the 30th, so just a couple of days ago, so make sure you go find that at kslsports.com. Let's talk a little bit about what types of players fit the Jazz draft mold. I wrote this a couple of days ago, just kind of looking at Dennis Lindsay's history with the Jazz and where he's like to pick up players or what types of players he's like to bring in the draft. And I have to say, it's been kind of surprisingly revealing. I guess I didn't realize how big this trend was for the Jazz. And the trend is kind of twofold. They really like blue bloods, meaning players from top-tier college programs, and they seem to favor length. Those seem to be the two things that are most common with the Jazz. So looking back at the players they've drafted now, they went with, starting in Dennis Lindsay's first year, which was 2013, they drafted Trey Burke. They drafted Rudy Gobert also later in that draft. Remember, they traded and acquired him, but they also have a little bit of a tendency to be willing to draft international players, but I don't know if that's a trend. Every team does that, and they actually haven't done it very often. It's really been Rudy Gobert and Dante Exum. But back to Trey Burke in 2013, Rodney Hood in 2014, Trey Lyles in 2016. I think 2015 they traded for George Hill, so they didn't have a pick. Acquired Donovan Mitchell in 2017. Remember, they traded Trey Lyles. And then they got Tony Bradley in that same draft also in 2017. And then in 2018, they drafted Grayson Allen. Well, Trey Burke's Michigan, which has been a top 10 team for the last decade, it seems like every year. Rodney Hood's Duke, always a top team. Trey Lyles from Kentucky, always a top team. Donovan Mitchell from Louisville, when Rick Pitino was there, they were certainly much better. And kind of are historically a blue blood. Tony Bradley, North Carolina, certainly a blue blood, and then back to Grayson Allen at Duke. So the Jazz have favored these types of prominent, premier, dominant college basketball teams. And I actually really like this approach. That's not to say you can't find, you know, stars and studs from other teams, and that's not to say that there aren't busts from these major teams. I think you could argue that, you know, Trey Lyles is a bit of a bust, that Trey Burke is a bust, that Tony Bradley is fine, but might not be worth a first-round draft pick considering how readily available backup centers are in the NBA, and he's just not developing in anything more than that. So it's not a can't-miss situation, but generally these kids went to the top high schools. They've been playing against the top competition their whole life, whether that's AAU or in high school. Then they go and play against other super high-level competition when you go to Duke because you have to play North Carolina or you have to play in the ACC and you have to play Florida State and you have to play, you know, kind of these traditionally great teams, or Michigan State if you want to go in the Big Ten and some of those schools in Michigan. It makes sense to me. I get why you do that. Kentucky, we know, is always going to have either Michigan State or Duke or North Carolina on their schedule and is probably going to go to the tournament. That didn't happen this year because college basketball got canceled, but I like it. Honestly, it's something that I think if I were in control, it's the type of decision I would want to make too. These guys are just not out of nowhere blow up, have a great season, and you draft that guy. And not that those kids don't come in and make it. They certainly do. You see success from those types of players, but it's a safer bet. And the Jazz haven't really swung for a lot of fences, maybe outside of Rudy Gobert, who doesn't fit this mold, and Donovan Mitchell, who they made kind of an aggressive trade to go up and get. Rodney Hood, at the end of the first round, is a really good pick. I think Grayson Allen actually is going to pan out to be a really good pick. I know he didn't work out with the Jazz, but because he got traded for Mike Conley, but I think Grayson Allen's a good pick. So I get why the Jazz are doing this, and they're going to be drafting at the end of the first round again. So keep an eye on some of those players from some of those big schools. And then you look at the Jazz liking length, and you look at kind of the wingspans of these guys that I mentioned. Trey Burke was, you know, plus five, I want to say, in his wingspan. He's a short guy, but he has really long arms. Trey Lyles had pretty long arms. Donovan Mitchell has freakish long arms. Tony Bradley has extremely long arms. Grayson Allen actually measured better than I had remembered. I think he's plus 3.5 in his measurements as well. So the Jazz kind of like these blue bloods that have long arms that allow them to have some defensive versatility, and I think that's something to keep an eye on because that is how the NBA is trending. So what I did is I went through this draft and looked at guys who were projected to be selected between 15 and 40 according to ESPN's latest mock draft, and found which guys go to those blue blood schools and which guys have long wingspans. And again, it's not a perfect science, but it is something that seems to have caught the eye of Dennis Lindsay and this Jazz front office in the past, and these are the names I ended up coming up with. Just looking at the blue bloods alone, Cole Anthony from North Carolina, Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky, Nico Mannion from Arizona, Josh Green from Arizona, Cassius Winston from Michigan State, Udoka Azubuike from Kansas, Vernon Carey from Duke, Zeke Nagy from Arizona, Devin Dotson from Kansas, Trey Jones from Duke, and Xavier Tillman Sr. From Michigan State. And then if you look at wingspans that are less than 4 inches of their height and subtracting those guys out, you're really only left with about four guys, and that's Maxey from Kentucky, Green from Michigan, or from Arizona, Azubuike from Kansas, and Tillman from Michigan State. And that's four guys, and actually all guys that I don't think Maxey's going to be available for the Jazz. He's really kind of pretty highly regarded to go in the top 20, if not the lottery. He's going to get this funny advantage where, or this funny bounce in the draft, because Tyler Herro's had such a good year playing shooting guard for Kentucky and not really showing off everything he can do, and then being so good in Miami. We know what Devin Booker's done in Arizona, I should say with Phoenix, in Arizona, but with the Suns after coming from Kentucky playing shooting guard, dropping to, what is he, 14? I think he got drafted one spot behind Trey Lyles, who was 13. We're going to fall in love with these Kentucky shooting guards who don't show everything they can do at the college level because Coach Calipari doesn't know how to use them or has so much talent around him that he doesn't use them the right way. And Maxey, I think, has that chance to be that guy, and he's probably going to end up jumping in the draft. So it ended up with Josh Green from Arizona, who wouldn't be at all surprising. I've already written about him. You can find that at kslsports.com. Azubuike from Kansas would be a little bit more of a surprise because he's older. He's very defensive-minded. He's a really good college defensive player. If the Jazz felt like they needed a big that could come in and play right away and do some of the same things Gobert does, he would make sense. And then I think Tillman actually would as well. Tillman could come in from Michigan State and bring some of those same things for the Jazz. He's certainly more of a playmaker. Some guys really like him. Honestly, just haven't seen enough of him. But some guys really, really like him. So I'll have to break down Xavier Tillman Sr. a little bit more as well. But you can find that article and the full breakdown of Jazz trends at kslsports.com. All right, let's get into two players who I think are interesting in the draft. And actually, we can talk about my overall favorite draft prospects here in the state of Utah. As you know, I like to really dig in on the draft. I'm trying to do full write-ups of strengths and weaknesses and how they fit with the Jazz on most of these players that are going to be available between, say, 15 and 45. You know, I'm going to honestly try and get 30 of these written before draft day on November 18th, which seems pretty solidified now. So keep an eye out for those. But I did do our two local players who are in the draft. When watching one of them, you can't help but watch another guy. And that's, of course, I'm talking about when we watch Sam Merrill at Utah State. It's really hard to not like Nemias Keita, who didn't enter this draft, which is weird. He probably should have stayed in the draft after his freshman season. That was 2 years ago. Decided to come back to school after having some bad draft workouts and not really getting the response he wanted. Went back for his sophomore year, got injured in the offseason playing for his national team, missed some games with Utah State, came back, and actually was better. I mean, his numbers were better, he looked better, he played better, but Utah State didn't have as big of a season as they did a couple of years ago in Craig Smith's first year. But when you watch Utah State, Keita just jumps off the floor because he's so big, He's a really good shot blocker. He's extremely raw, but he still puts together some really nice moves with his feet. This back to the basket where he scores easily at the rim. He catches lobs. He really, I mean, just shuts down the opposing offense sometimes because they're afraid to go in and challenge him because of how big he is. He's going to translate to the NBA. It's a little concerning how raw he is because he's going into his junior season and like his athleticism is still kind of uncontained. He needs to get stronger to control his body a little bit more. He just needs to refine his game a lot. It would be much better if he was doing this against NBA players instead of against kind of low-level Mountain West college players, but he stuck around. Craig Smith's a good coach. He's going to get the most out of him, but he's going to be an NBA player, and he's the best prospect right now we have in the state. It's weird to me he's not in the draft this year. He should be. I think he would have gotten picked, but he's not, so he'll be back at Utah State next year, so not going to spend a bunch of time on him. If I were going to tell you my second favorite draft prospect in the state, I think most people would look at Sam Merrill and really the top prospect this year because he declared and Kata didn't. Most people, most big boards have Sam Merrill over Yoeli Childs. I think it's Yoeli, personally. Having watched them both now quite a bit, we'll start with what Yoeli does really well. Really strong. You've seen his body. You know he's kind of got this super muscular build of a Paul Millsap or Trevor Booker or that type of player. He doesn't play like those guys. He had a really great shooting year this year from the three-point line, over 40%. It was like 45% for BYU this season. It was absolutely incredible. He's a good athlete when he can gather and really jump and finish on top of the rim, especially at his size. But he doesn't show it all the time. It really doesn't. It's not the most fluid, translatable athleticism. And there's freakishly athletic guys in the NBA who are afraid to jump in traffic or can't jump when they're getting bumped, and it really takes them out of their game. Yoeli, it's not like he can't jump in traffic, but he's not this kind of perfect athlete who's super fluid, who catches the ball and jumps over, you know, bigger defenders in the paint. He needs time to gather. So a lot of his game is kind of not based on his athleticism, which is kind of a strength, kind of a minus. Who he reminds me of, and this is a weird comp because he's known as being so unathletic, is the Jazz's George Niang. He's going to have to be a three-point shooter. Talking about Yoeli Childs here. He's going to have to be a three-point shooter. He's going to have to shoot over 40% or near 40% from the three-point line and then do a couple of other little things, moving the ball, attacking closeouts by putting the ball on the floor, rebounding, which he's a very good rebounder at the college level. That's a plus for him. But that's really what his game's going to be like. It's not going to be Paul Millsap, back to the basket, or face up. He really shows almost none of that in college. He's going to have to be a spot-up three-point shooter who moves the ball when they close out on him too hard or can get into the paint and then pass or can finish at the rim. His game has to really simplify itself down to those two things, and I think that's what is going to make Yoeli Childs an NBA player. And that's why I actually think he probably makes the most sense as a draft prospect or has the best chance to fit because he's got the size compared to a guy like Sam Merrill who... Sam Merrill can shoot the heck out of the ball. There's just no question about that. He's over 40% for a four-year career at Utah State. He takes insanely difficult shots, and he makes them at a high rate. It's impressive. It's fun to watch him play. He is an okay defender, actually. He's probably better than I would expect. He's not, you know, Jimmer Fredette or some of these really horrendous shooters coming out of college or great shooters coming out of college that are horrendous defenders. He can actually play a little bit of defense. He's got a pretty strong body. But, man, his lack of athleticism is going to kill him. And I'm worried that a lot of these shooters that we talk about are these guys who just run so hard and so fast and come off that screen on a dribble handoff or catch a ball that's waiting for them on a pass off of a screen and rise and square their shoulders and fire. And I'm talking about, you know, Kyle Korver. We've seen him do that. You see Duncan Robinson do it right now. J.J. Redick has made a whole career out of doing it and just running full speed. You know, it's a move Dame uses a lot now. C.J. McCollum uses it a lot. You have to run really fast to beat your defender, stop on a dime, turn, square your shoulders, and get that shot off. Sam Merrill's not even... I haven't seen him run quick enough to be able to do that play. And that's kind of scary to me. I want to know that he can do that. And again, with NBA players and playing with, you know, Rudy Gobert, if he ended up on the Jazz as an undrafted free agent, getting those types of screens would help. He'd be running better plays with better teammates, and those guys would have more attention, and it would free him up for more spots. But the reason he had to make so many tough shots at Utah State is because he cannot get himself open on or off the ball. And that's scary. You have to be able to show that you can get good looks in the NBA because, yeah, you can shoot over a 6'3" guy from the Mountain West Conference, but that guy's 6'8" now in the NBA. I mean, every single one of those guys is 6'8", 6'5", has a long wingspan. I mean, going up against Royce O'Neal is so much different than going up against the best defender in the college level. They're just not very good. So doing it at the NBA level is just going to be really tough. And if the only thing you do is shoot, they're just going to focus in on you, and you're never going to get open. And he's not going to be able to get on the floor if he can't get open. So that's my concern about Sam Merrill. He's an okay passer. He's not a great passer by any means. It's not like this great addition that he has to his game. Like I said, he's an okay defensive player, but I've got questions about that because he's not super fast at the next level too. There's just, I'm a little bit more concerned about Sam Merrill, but you do love the thing that he can do as well as anyone in this draft, really, and that's shoot the three-point shot. And we look at guys like Duncan Robinson, who have done it in college and then kind of broke into the NBA, and that's kind of all they do now, too. Duncan Robinson is more skilled than we give him credit for, but I've got concerns about Sam Merrill not being able to turn into one of those guys, and everyone hoping he's one of those guys because he shot so well in college. So this draft process is going to be interesting for him because he's not going to be able to show teams whether he can or can't do it. And if he can't do it but doesn't have to show it, that's going to be a plus for him, and he's going to end up getting drafted. If they find a way to say, hey, we're matching you up against other NBA competition and you're not getting open, that's bad, and you're not going to get drafted. And I think it's both a real, both are a very realistic possibility for him. So those are my thoughts on our local players. I would have it go Nemias Keita number one, and that's how every draft person would have it right now. They would have Keita number one on the local draft boards. I've got Yoeli Childs two. I think most people would have him three, and I've got Sam Merrill three, and most people would have him two. I think they all have a chance to make it. It'll be interesting to see if they're going to get an opportunity with an off-season league, rookie league, the way we usually get in Las Vegas or here with Utah Jazz Summer League, to kind of prove that they belong. Remember, that's how Duncan Robinson ended up making it. He didn't get drafted out of Michigan, signed with Miami, played well on their Summer League team, got a two-way contract, played well in the G League, got called up, and then it's been great ever since. And guys are going to miss that opportunity. Hopefully it's neither Yoeli Childs or Sam Merrill who miss out on that opportunity to get a chance to play at the next level. All right, I think that's it for the stories I've written this week. Oh, I told you I'd talk about Rudy Gobert in China. Rudy Gobert did express support, shared some support from a French actor, Omar Sy, towards the Muslims that are being held in China right now, kind of being put in these... they call what China is calling them, what the government is calling them, is these re-educational camps. It just sounds like they're rounding up large populations of Muslims in China. It's been one of the issues that a lot of people have wanted to see the NBA be more open speaking about, as they've been talking about the Black Lives Matters movement and human rights violations here in the United States. They've asked, why do we continue to see the NBA working in China and not calling out those abuses? And that's something Rudy Gobert has done. It's hard for the NBA because the NBA, when Daryl Morey said his comments about Hong Kong last October before the Warriors and the Lakers played their preseason game, it ended up being pulled off of the main Chinese television channels. It cost the league, I mean, tens if not hundreds of millions, if not in the $1 billion conversation. We'll see how quickly they get those games back on, but it cost the NBA enormous amounts of money because those Chinese channels that the games were on reach a billion different viewers. So all that advertising is huge money, and the NBA lost that. That's still on in China through another app that you can get and watch the games, from my understanding, but it certainly doesn't have the same reach that that the other kind of central Chinese television system had. So that was a big loss. So speaking out against it has had dire financial issues for the NBA, and that's why they haven't wanted to deal with it. I don't think that's any question. So Rudy Gobert kind of being outspoken against the government in China is a big deal. There hasn't been much blowback yet, but that doesn't mean it won't be seen and it won't be heard, and the NBA is going to have to continue to figure out how to deal with that issue because it's where they get a ton of their money, and it's, you know, kind of goes against what some of their values have been as one of the more progressive leagues. So that's it's going to be a headache for Adam Silver, and we'll see if more players join Rudy Gobert in speaking out against it, or if Gobert does what Daryl Morey did and kind of walk some of his comments back. All right, let's see if we got some questions in the mailbag. I didn't think there was a ton, but it looks like there's a couple here. Cameron Young said, when trading Ed Davis, can the Jazz trade him for a second-round pick straight, or do they have to take roughly back the same $5 million in salary from the other team? Good question. That depends on what the other team's salary cap situation looks like. So Detroit, Miami, I'm doing this off the top of my head, New York, Phoenix, there's one other team, I can't remember who it is right now, at least one other, has cap space, and they could absorb Ed Davis for a second-round pick and not need to send money back. So if you have $5 million in space, you could take on Ed Davis. And a lot of teams can figure out a way to get $5 million in space. So the Jazz could certainly do that. Or they could trade it for a guy who has kind of a more of a non-guaranteed contract and take it in and eventually waive one of those guys. So there is opportunity and room to do that. But anyone who's over the salary cap, yeah, those have to match within whatever it is, $150,000 or whatever the number is. So yes, potentially they could use that to clear cap room. Or maybe the Jazz have to give up a second-round pick and Ed Davis to clear that type of cap room. You know, you're basically telling someone that they have to spend $5 million on Ed Davis, and we don't know if he can play anymore, especially after his injury. I think he can probably play. Maybe he can't. So we'll see, and that's going to be what the other teams are gambling on. And I do think the Jazz will explore opportunities to move Ed Davis, certainly to clear some cap space. And if they could get a second-round draft pick back, I think they would love that, because we know the Jazz have liked having second-round picks. It just gives them a little added flexibility, both in the draft or in trades. I had another question coming in on Twitter. It was Mr. Monsta on Twitter. He had said, are the Jazz going to get involved in the Paul George trade talks? Of course, Paul George, there's rumors that he's going to be traded. We'll have to see what the Clippers decide to do with their open coaching job. I doubt they're going to end up trading Paul George. It's hard to get guys that are that talented. I know he was awful in the playoffs. I know he has been awful in the playoffs. I think it's a very serious question. You know that the rumors have come out that Clippers ownership, Steve Ballmer, was really upset with how poorly they handled this when Doc Rivers was in charge of the team. Acquiring Paul George or using some of the draft picks they'd had in the past to get guys who weren't Michael Porter Jr., it's kind of been a headache. I think it's hard to invest that much in Paul George with all the draft picks they've given up and not get him back. I think that would be, or not retain him longer than a season, unless you have a surefire trade. And right now, there's probably just not a surefire trade out there for a guy in Paul George. So, yeah, Mr. Monsta on Twitter. I don't think he gets traded. I think the Jazz are in a very interesting spot, and probably more than we've talked about, on what to do with Mike Conley's $30+ million expiring contract, which has a ton of value. If you've got a guy who you want to unload, say it's Chris Paul, say it's Russell Westbrook. You know, the Jazz, I honestly firmly believe, could have Russell Westbrook on their roster to start next season if they wanted to. They don't want to. No one wants to have Russell Westbrook's contract right now. He's shown he doesn't win in the playoffs. He showed it against the Jazz. He's shown it year after year. He showed it this year with the Rockets. His style of play does not help you in the playoffs. So you don't want him for that much money for that long, and Houston's going to have that albatross around their neck now for a really long time. Having a $30 million expiring contract that it's going to expire next summer, when all these huge contracts come off the books and you've got all these superstar free agents that are available, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Anthony Davis is a free agent this year, Rudy Gobert, like all these teams are going to, there's going to be teams that want to say they think they can get involved in this conversation of getting, assigning a free agent and having that cap space. And the Jazz probably do too. But maybe they say, hey, we don't think we can compete with all these teams that have money, but if we can trade for a guy that's under contract for the next several seasons, and yes, it affects how the Jazz would be able to sign Rudy Gobert and what they want to do with Donovan Mitchell this offseason as far as his extension, but the Jazz could use that $30+ million expiring contract to rent a guy for a year or bring a guy in for 2 or 3 years and say, hey, we think this is a long-term piece. Maybe they're not as good as Mike Conley is going to be next year, or maybe they're a better fit, or maybe they come in and it's insurance in case Rudy Gobert doesn't decide to come back. There's all these options the Jazz have with that type of expiring money, and it could be it could put the Jazz in some interesting conversations that maybe we weren't thinking they would be having as early as this offseason. All right, that's going to do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. That's all the questions I got. Appreciate everyone who sends them in. You can do it throughout the week. You can DM me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. That's the easiest way to get in touch with me, or just tweet directly at me as well. Probably not going to have an episode next week. I'm out of town, but definitely we'll have a follow-up soon after, maybe that next Monday, if not the next Friday. So appreciate you tuning in to the Jazz Notes podcast. As always, you can read my articles at kslsports.com. And stick around for future episodes.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.